Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5.
Yeah, come on!
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? The weekend is behind us, the new week ahead, and we are waiting for you to have some fun as we take you on through until 4 p.m. It is Barry, it is Nick, it is Joel. We all present and accounted for. Usual Suspects. And boys, how was the weekend right off the top? Let's get
busy.
That out of the way.
Busy weekend.
You were rolling and going. Nick, you were rocketing. There was a lot going on.
Yeah, dude, like driving to Mexico and back on Thursday, Austin and back on Saturday. Had a gig last night at the Houston Improv. Busy, busy weekend.
Did you talk about technique and other things last night at the couples therapy?
No. We don't. Well, no, I guess we don't get into
technique. Did you mention Black China and say these are things not to do?
Yeah, no. We didn't. Knee licking never came up.
Okay.
But the advice that I give is usually pretty horrible, intentionally. So.
But do some people take it seriously?
No. I mean, it's obvious it's not serious. Okay. It's literally, we're just up there seeing who can give the worst advice to get the biggest laugh.
And then you were there firsthand. Celtics Rockets, Nick.
I mean, I was.
Hell of a game.
Really fun game.
ABC had to love it. Even Chris Paul said ABC better be happy with that one.
They should.
But if that is indeed what a lot of people are hoping for, if that's a finals preview, it's a pretty damn good game to count on a 7-game series on.
Yeah, especially if you consider what happened in, you know, on the game at the games during the regular season between these two teams. The first game, I think Paul was out. Second game, Harden was out. This game, they were both there. And it was a really close game. So
I saw you tweet. You said this is the best home game you've seen this year.
Yeah.
Which I take your word for because you've seen most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had the party Saturday night, so I had to watch it afterwards. And I was like, okay, well, I know they won because of the tweet.
Right.
Because I figured you wouldn't be tweeting that if they lost, right?
Probably not. Probably okay. Not, yeah.
But I was like, okay, we're going to see what happens now. This must be like a buzzer beater or something. It was a damn good game, though.
Even the sloppiness I kind of appreciated in the first half because it was a sloppy first half.
Yeah, it was.
Or at least the first quarter. But it was still a fun game, man. I appreciated all four quarters. I mean, that was, and the atmosphere was the loudest it's been the entire season.
That's what I was going to ask you, because that's what everybody was talking about, that for once this season you had a playoff atmosphere and it was loud. Yeah, and that's what I was happy to hear.
I think it was Ariza that said that in a post-game interview.
Oh, did he really?
He said that the fans were really into it. It felt like a little bit like a playoff atmosphere in here. And he said the game felt like a playoff game.
Well, so, and you only play that team twice. You blew a 20-some point lead the first time and then had Marcus Smart getting all up in James Harden's business until he drew two offensive fouls, and they ended up squeaking that one out on national TV. So perfect rematch, national TV, at home, Saturday night, two high seeds going at it, and there was a little more to play for. You mentioned it, Nick. I don't know what his post-game quotes were, but Trevor Ariza is a guy that doesn't show much emotion. That dude was lit. He was all over the place, and he was fired up. That was great to see.
Yeah, especially with that play, that one play at the end where he was just on both sides of the court, and then he kind of looked to the crowd and raised his hands. You usually don't see that out of Trevor Ariza, but he certainly showed his emotions in that game, so I definitely appreciated it. Everybody, I think, all the emotions were pretty high.
It was crazy to watch this game and the spurts that the contributors from the Rockets had. There was a time when James Harden took over the game, mm-hmm. and then there was a time when Eric Gordon took over the game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then there was a time when Trevor Ariza took over the game. And I don't know if you really paid attention, there were times defensively that P.J. Tucker. So, I mean, it was just like.
There was a time that James Harden disappeared. But the fact that he's got help this year means a ton because a Gordon can step up, because Paul can stabilize the offense. But like you said, this team, everybody's talking about, well, who's in the rotation come playoff time? Who cares? You have so much insurance now that you didn't have in the past. You got moving pieces that can step up, fill in. I did a piece for Sports Map on all the different players that have stepped up, not named Chris Paul or James Harden.
I saw that.
And when you look at it, you forget at the start of this 15-game streak, Gerald Green in those first five games, and actually the first seven, huge. Then he basically can't get off the bench for a while, but when you call his number, he's still ready. These guys are professionals, and there's nothing wrong with being too deep. I don't think.
No, not at all. I'm okay with it. I look, the insurance policy is there for a reason. We talked about Nene on the show last week when Barry was out. He had a good game. If you can get 15 minutes out of him and score, 8 to 10 points, get 5 assists, some boards, that's all you can ask at an NA right now. And so there's a lot of people that are stepping up on this roster outside, like you mentioned in your piece, James Harden and Chris Paul, and that's what they're going to need in the postseason, no question.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I feel like I almost don't want to see Ryan Anderson come back.
That's another big question.
I hate to say that. But I feel like this team, getting Eric Gordon back to me was a lot more important.
Absolutely.
Obviously. But I kind of like this team as is. And when I mean as is, I'm including Wright and I'm including Gerald Green. But if
Joe Johnson.
If Ryan Anderson was to just be, we can't use it the rest of the year, I would be okay
with
that.
I was going to ask you guys
that. This team is just fine without him.
Do you owe him something because you're paying him $20 million a year? Or do you just say, hey, look, you're still going to get your money, but we're chasing a ring, and in order to do that, these guys give us the best chance to win. Because, again, as long as he stays ready, if you need shooters from time to time, you can still bring him in. It's just he was a starter. I'm kind of leaning Barry's way, and, Nick, I'm curious what you think. I'm okay if he's not in the rotation anymore because you've got guys that can fill in.
I'm okay with that, too. But when you have a situation like they do now, because I believe all of Brandon Wright and Joe Johnson, they're going to be out. But Ryan Anderson's out, too, because he's dealing with some hip soreness. Mm-hmm. But in the event that it was just Brandon Wright and Joe Johnson, I'm sure he's going to get more minutes because of those two being out. But because he's out, they're going to have to depend on other players on the rotation. I'm totally okay with him not playing. I've been saying it. I've probably hated on Ryan Anderson the most alongside Joel.
Yeah, you have.
The whole season.
You guys really hate him. I don't hate him.
I hate it on his game.
Yeah, I hate his salary, too. If he's just if he's Steve Kerr and you're paying him $6 or $7 million a year to be a shooter, hey, great. But you're paying him $20 million a year. I need more than just a guy that shoots threes.
Yeah, that's almost superstar money.
And he doesn't really get out of his slumps. Eric Gordon got out of his slump.
Now,
I also need him to not have those slumps at $20 million a year. If you are a designated sniper and a shooter, make shots.
Yeah. Okay. I hate to do this to you guys. I really do.
What?
All right. I'm going to list you three-point shooting percentages. Boy. All right?
Yeah.
And you tell me.
I already know who it's going to be, too.
All right. Yeah. No, I'm going to go lowest to highest, and then I'm going to give you three names, and you have to put them in the order that matches their three-point percentage, okay? The lowest on this list is 38%. Then there's – no, excuse me. I'm sorry. The lowest is 34%.
38, if it's the lowest, it's pretty good.
No, the lowest is 34.2, mm-hmm. and then 38, and then 38.3. Mm-hmm. The names that I'll throw out are James Harden, Eric Gordon, and Ryan Anderson.
Ryan Anderson is going to be at the top for sure.
Then
no question.
James Harden, then Eric Gordon.
I would say Gordon, then James Harden, but I don't know.
Yeah, so the highest shooting percentage from 3 points on that list is Ryan Anderson. At 38.3. Mm-hmm. Second is James Harden at 38. Eric Gordon is third.
Remember
at
why?
34.2%.
Because the November slump.
Gordon had a really bad, couple really bad slumps. No, one in November and one recently that really brought his percentage down. I thought you were going to throw Joe Johnson in there because as a member of the Jazz, he was awful, but he's going to get more open looks as a member of the Rockets. So it'll be interesting. But
we've talked about this, though. And Matt Harab mentioned this to me when I was doing a show with him on the network. He's like, but he's shooting 39%. I'm like, that percentage is deceiving because Ryan Anderson knows when to stop shooting. He's not going to go for 3-for-12 or 3-for-15. He's going to go 3-for-7. He's going to go 3-for-8. That's what Ryan Anderson does.
His conscience knows, too, because he gets like itchy. Like he knows, then he doesn't want to pull the trigger when he should. And that's another thing that worries me. You need guys. Joe Johnson's a guy that his whole career has been hit throwing daggers in the hearts of teams' hopes. Joe Johnson might miss 9 in a row, but he's going to take the 10th one, especially if the game's on the line. Ryan Anderson's going to be like, maybe I shouldn't shoot this. You take it instead.
That is true, and we've seen that this year. We saw it a little bit last year when he was slumping. So, yeah, it is something that you can't be hesitant. You see an Eric Gordon missing, and he doesn't stop shooting because he knows that's his job.
Right.
I mean, you see even Tucker and these guys, when they're not shooting well, Ariza, they still shoot it. I feel like a lot of times Anderson is that guy that's like hot potato when the ball hits him if he's in a slump.
There's no doubt about it. All right, we're just getting started. It's Barry, Nick, and Joel, and we are the usual suspects, but we call the show what we do because you like to come through and participate. So, therefore, the lines are open, 713-780-3776, where you can call or you can text that number. And, of course, you can reach us via social media on Twitter, where it's at Barry is funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, and at the producer. Why am I screwing that up?
That's right.
You said it right.
The producer,
said it right.
Nick. Okay. Yeah. All right, so we're going to be here, so should you. Take you up till 4. It's the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, you heard the man. It is Nick, it is Barry, it is Joel. It's The Usual Suspects on a Monday, coming out of a weekend, coming out of a Rockets win. We were talking Rockets before the break, fellas, and during the break, I just looked at the schedule. Quite hellacious if you're a Rockets fan. This is a good test for Houston. At Oklahoma City tomorrow night. They only played the Thunder 3 times this year. The Thunder is only here once. That's coming up later, I believe, this month. But you play at the Thunder. You've already lost the first game. So if you lose tomorrow night, you lose the season series. Then it's a back-to-back. So Wednesday, you're at Milwaukee, who just beat Philadelphia last night, but they're hot and cold, but they're a playoff team. And then Friday night, you're at Toronto, the number one seed in the East. That's a pretty good test for this team.
Yeah, I remember last week we reviewed the whole month of March, and we talked about the fact that they only have some layups at the end of the month. I mean, they've got Atlanta, Chicago, and Phoenix, but the rest of the month, outside of, you know, maybe a game here and there, like Dallas, it's a tough month for them, man. And they'll be lucky not to lose, three or four games in the month. Which, when you look at their previous months, that would be
since they ran the table last month.
Well, they were undefeated in the month of February. They lost one game in November. They did have that 5-game losing streak back in December, but they only lost 4 games in January. So they could potentially lose 3 or 4 games, and down the stretch is when that could hurt them the most. I know last night on TV, I'm watching our pal Jerome Solomon saying he's not sure when, but they'll lose again. But I see so many people saying this team may never lose again. I'm like, there's still a lot of good teams out there. All right. I'm excited for these Rockets, and I think that they really are one of the best teams in the NBA, but they can get got. I mean, they're not undefeated.
Here's a couple things, because I agree with you. And Nick, you said in the break, you know, I'd be happy if they got the Oklahoma City game, and then if they lose the next two. Look, I think they'll beat Milwaukee. Milwaukee has too many holes. They're just not there yet.
Right.
Toronto and OKC are tests, and I think it's a big game because of the fact, like I said, the season series with OKC. But here's a bigger thing. Every one of these games, from their perspective, not the Rockets' perspective, that 15-game winning streak, and if it keeps going, that's a bigger target than it would otherwise be for them. These teams are going to be gunning for them, going, well, tonight the streak ends, and we're going to be fired up because we want to end that streak. And I don't know. You were there Saturday night. The big thing that I kept saying was, when you mentioned that sloppy first half, that's what worries me, to Barry's point about being got. There's still that factor to me that when you come playoff time and you can start kind of squeezing the lemon a little bit, you see what kind of juice you get out of it. I'm a little concerned that if they get those kind of slumps in the playoffs, it can really hurt them, because I don't like that sloppiness and then with a lot of missed shots involved, and they really heavily rely on the three, as we know. If it's not going, I'd like to see them attack and have a plan B. That's just me.
I think that, coupled with the fact that, and this might be nitpicking and people might be upset, but there were quite a few plays where I felt like the rotation, like rotating on defense, was just a struggle. And they were not picking up the right man when there was a pick and roll, or when they had to pick up somebody else in the corner. They were just late to get there. And I don't know if that's going to be cool in the playoffs, because everybody's going to up their game. Well, and the other thing is, Nene, is he going to be able to rotate on defense if he has to in the postseason? Because I'm afraid he's going to get hurt.
It's a great point. I was watching the game thinking about Nene and his contributions, and I'm thinking to myself, offensively, he can still contribute. Mm-hmm. He's still a presence down low that can contribute. But defensively, he's so much slower that these big guys are actually blowing past him and getting to the rim. And that is where you're like, ugh. Keep in mind, though, I get what you're saying, because you're right. But I think defensively, most teams are going to have a lapse at some point in a game. That's why you always, when a team gets down by 15 to 20 points, they're not worried about it in the NBA. And most teams end up coming back, and that's why you always hear, oh, the last 2 minutes is when a game is won, because you'll see a team get up and down, and I think it's because of the defensive lap. Because that's the hardest thing to do, is play good defense for 48 minutes.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, the concern is, when you play a team like the Warriors or the Celtics or even the Cavs to a certain degree, you have to maintain that defensive focus for 48 minutes. So that's why you hope guys like P.J. Tucker and Luka Mbamute will keep them in it and focus. I feel like Tucker is the guy. You can say what you want about James Harden being the leader, and you can say what you want about Chris Paul kind of being the general, but when it comes to getting back on defense and taking it serious, watch PJ Tucker. Watch his body language and the way he talks to guys when they need a big stop versus anybody else. He's the one that's demanding the stop from the rest of the guys.
Him
so
and Luka
Mbamute
are the guys that I think are the catalysts on the defensive end, because they get it. The one thing that worried me was when Montrezl Harrell started talking to P.J. Tucker and then we're scoring on him. I was like, man, that's not the P.J. Tucker I'm used to, but hopefully that was just that one game, because he's looked better since. You guys are dead on with it, and the thing that worries me, and you know that this has always been a hot button with me, if Brandon Wright comes back for one game, hurts his knee, and you don't know what you got, if I'm Daryl Morey, I'm still keeping a real close eye on who's out there, because of the fact that Nene, like you guys mentioned, is slow defensively, but also if he's tapping out at 13 to 15 minutes, in the playoffs, there's going to be times when you're going to have to lean a little harder and get more. And if it's not from him, then from who? Because Clint Capella is your mainstay, rim protector, shot blocker, and guy. But if he gets in foul trouble, now you're really kind of screwed to me, unless you have one more guy. I guess you can try Tarik Black again, but we all know how D'Antoni is when he doesn't trust somebody.
Yeah, you know, you wonder if Capella's minutes are actually going to go up more in the playoffs. And I would imagine they would.
Like, they have to.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. He's been on minutes restrictions ever since he's gotten into the league, because they were concerned about him breaking down. Now they're really going to lean, and that's without Nene being hurt. God forbid Nene gets dinged up like he did last year, you know, and it gets hurt
in
the playoffs.
He's in a bucket too, so that can be kind of a fragile, reoccurring injury that can come back and haunt you. You talked about him last week about, well, what do you do? Do you cap him at 15 minutes during the regular season so you can save him for the postseason? Or do you condition him for the postseason and play him more minutes in the regular season and risk him getting injured in the regular season? I feel like it's a double-edged sword. It's a really tough decision to make if you're Coach D'Antoni.
And the thing is, it's a great point, but the thing is, better to know now than when it's too late, because last year it was too late. When he got hurt and that was it, they can't just go out and get a street free agent and go, hey, we're going to insert this guy and plan B works just as well. I'd push him a little bit now and find out what you got so that you can have a backup plan. Because look, as long as Tillman's not worried about money, no one says that you're capped out right now and you should stop. If someone else gets bought out, or there's someone else out there that you think might be able to help that's going to be healthy, this team's too good to let a problem like that pop up at the wrong time and hurt you long term with a chance to win a championship.
I was looking at the, because we were talking schedule and who was left in the next five games. I wanted to see who had strength of schedule, what the Rockets' strength of schedule was versus, say, the Warriors and even some other folks in the West. The Spurs have the toughest schedule down the stretch. The Thunder are second. The Rockets in the Western Conference have the 10th toughest schedule down the stretch. And the team with the easiest, the Warriors.
I was going to say Golden State, isn't it?
Yeah, figures, right? They have the 15th most difficult schedule out of the Western Conference down the stretch.
And the thing is, guys, the other thing that you mentioned, the Spurs, which is a big thing, and Nick, you and I off air were talking a little bit about Minnesota. Those are two teams holding down the three and the four. When all is said and done, and it's so bunched up in both conferences, but particularly in the West, because of Jimmy Butler's injury, because of the uncertainty of Kawhi Leonard, and now with Aldridge being out, the Spurs and the Wolves could end up going from home court to being one hell of a first round tough out matchup with somebody, because they're not going to, they may not be there because everybody else is playing so well and they've got injured players. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. All right, Craig wants to get in here. He wants to mention one of the guys that we mentioned in Gerald Green. What's up, Craig?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Hey, I've just been wondering where Gerald Green has disappeared to, because I love the energy and the hustle that he brought, and it seems like he has that ability that you guys were talking about to just keep firing those threes, even when he's off a little bit. But, I mean, he seems like he's been an excellent three-point shooter, a pretty good defender with that energy, and really our only guy who I've seen that can finish above the rim, like especially against good shot blockers. He doesn't go up and try and lay it up. So I'm just wondering, you know, where he's been lately, and, you know, is he on the schneid, or is he hurt, or what's going on?
I think part of it is, remember, when he came in, they were struggling with injuries and needed to add some depth, and there was more minutes for him. When you start getting your role players back, when you start getting your, you know, the guys that are in the at the in the first six or seven players in the rotation, he's going to get bumped back. He's also erratic. I mean, he's very streaky. So when you get a guy that's streaky like that, they're on a 15-game winning streak. They're fighting for the first place in the Western Conference. You can't afford to put in a guy who's going to go 2-for-9 or 2-for-12. You already have one of those in Ryan Anderson. So I think this is just a matter of there's not enough minutes and maybe a little bit of trust. I mean, he was hot for a while. His defense isn't great. His shooting is streaky. He brings a lot of energy. Think of him as he's this year's Corey Brewer.
Ooh,
but maybe with not
better.
As good a defense.
Yeah.
I mean, flipped,
you're
right?
Right. Probably
flipped.
Right. Yeah.
Because Corey Brewer became a liability a little bit.
Here's the thing, I'm with you. In the last five games, he can't put it in and he keeps pulling. And you could see the frustration on D'Antoni's face. Like, he comes in cold as ice and he's already lighting it up from 36 feet, trying to put it in. Taking bad shots is one thing, but if you're not getting it done on the other end, because like you said, he's not Corey Brewer, that's a double negative for you. And the other third thing is, Joe Johnson came in. You got to find out what you have with him, too. So minutes that Gerald Green might already have been getting, now he's got to kind of take a back seat while they see if Joe can actually fit in and work, or if Joe's not going to be a good fit, and they know come playoff time who D'Antoni can count on. So he's kind of the odd man out, not his fault. But look, if he's a professional and just plays his cards right, especially during this stretch, there's going to be opportunities for him to play with Anderson and other guys out.
Yeah, especially when you consider that you've got Gordon, you've got Johnson, like you said, and then you got guys that kind of play that role, that shooting guard role, like Harden, if he's in the game with Chris Paul, and guys like Ariza will still be that shooting guard, small forward, depending on what lineup is out there. So it's tough. There's just not enough minutes to go around.
But it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
All right, we'll continue to roll on. Charlie Polillo joins us as he always does Mondays and Fridays. He's the person of interest on The Usual Suspects. He's coming up next. It's right here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, it's how we do it. Hour number one, Mondays and Fridays. The man who has a plan on SportsMap 94.1, our sister station, the Charlie Polillo Show, because it's such a creative title.
I was not consulted.
Baloney. He does 11 to 1 by himself. Then he comes over and he joins us. He bookends the week. So, Charles, without further ado, welcome back in.
Thanks for having me, or tolerating me.
I like tolerating. You're right. We were talking Rockets. I know I've heard you on your show, too, and it's a little bit perplexing that there's not more talk or viewership for a Rockets team that is kicking butt and taking names. But Saturday night, another example of, we were talking, good problem to have. Very deep team, and the great thing is they're getting contributions from everybody around Chris Paul and James Harden with another solid victory against the Celtics.
They beat one of the four or five best teams in the NBA Saturday, with Harden having a game, Paul not having a very good game. That was stout. Eric Gordon's had these teaser games where he shot the ball from the three, more along the lines where he shot it during his career, multiple 40% seasons. He's having a heck of a year, but he shot the three crappily. It was 7 of 11 Saturday night. Before Saturday night, it was 34%, which isn't even league average. So they have the points per possession, one of the greatest offenses ever assembled, and there's actually still a little room for improvement, specifically with Eric Gordon. If he starts shooting 40% from three, I presume D'Antoni's going to give an extended look to Joe Johnson, and he has 6 weeks to get it together, but he doesn't look good. He's not really a fit for the Rocket style. I really thought when they added him, the addition of Joe Johnson best served the Rockets if he has goods left to help in the playoffs. Not so much in what he would do for the Rockets, because I don't think he should be playing 20 minutes per game for them when they're playing for real stuff, but at least Golden State didn't get him. Oklahoma City didn't get him. San Antonio may wind up in the lottery, but the Spurs didn't get him. The Celtics didn't get him. So I don't know what Joe Johnson has left, but at least if he has it to offer, it won't be at the Rockets' expense.
Well, and it was depth. Yeah, when you look at it.
But they're extremely deep. Gerald Green saying, hey, we had enough depth. I never get to play anymore.
Yeah, well.
And when I do, I got to shoot 50 times in a minute.
Let me ask you this,
Ryan
though.
Ryan Anderson, hold still. This won't hurt your hip very much. Okay, now we can list you as out with a sore hip.
Yeah. I mean, who would you trust going in the playoffs if you had to, you know, you're going to have to sit your starters and you've got to go down there, the seventh or eighth guy. Would you rather have a Joe Johnson or would you rather have a Gerald Green on the floor?
Well, Gerald Green to me is not in the equation. He's okay. A desperation, hope he hits his first out of control three and maybe in a given game he's a hot hand. Ryan Anderson's a better three-point shooter. So for that specific role, his playing time has been cut notably. But they are. If the NBA goes to 12-on-12 for the playoffs, the Warriors have no chance.
That's true.
I've said they depleted their bench.
Five, I still think Golden State's the team to beat. Their best five is, I still think, better than the Rockets' best five, though the gap is definitely narrowed. But the Rockets' depth is crazy.
Well, it's funny because a couple of months ago, actually maybe a couple months into the season, I said I think the Rockets are the deepest team in the NBA. And I kind of got some, what? And then they went out and added more depth. And I feel like, yeah, they're definitely the deepest team. I kind of thought they were before when you considered you had Eric Gordon, but you kept looking down that bench at what you had with Mbamute and Tucker, who weren't starting at the time. This was already a deep team. So it fares well for them. And to your point about the Warriors bench kind of getting depleted, you're right. When the game sometimes can't be won or lost, not when you're starters versus starters, but when you have bench versus bench play, That's going to make a big difference in the playoffs.
I mean, Brandon Wright is hurt. Who cares? If Nene is healthy, how much is Brandon Wright going to play?
But that's a big if. We just talked about it. No, so you got to worry about it. That's why I said if as long as Tillman doesn't have a problem, I'm still kicking the tires and looking what's out there because either the injury is the problem with Brandon Wright or the worry of getting an injury to Nene. Look, guys, I'm just going to say it. I was going to tweet it out during the game Saturday night, and I didn't. But Greg Monroe would have looked really good in a Rockets uniform just because when you call him, he is effective. He had a hell of a game against the Rockets coming off the bench. Their bench was huge against a Rockets bench that has been holding their own, and that's the only deficiency I see in this Rockets team right now. All the depth in the world at every other position, that front court depth does bother me just a little bit.
It's fair. But I really can't see any other team in the West right now other than Golden State beating them 4 out of 7.
Oh, I agree there.
Now, this week will be interesting. Oklahoma City tomorrow night, back-to-back at Milwaukee Wednesday. And plenty of people will sleep on Toronto because it's Canada. Mm-hmm. Best record in the East. Destroyed the Rockets at Toyota Center earlier this year. Now it's one random game during the week in November or December. But best home record in the NBA. It's not the Rockets. It's not the Warriors. It's the Raptors. So if somehow they win all three of these games and the streak gets to 18, at least they can take dead aim at the 22, the streak they had 9 years ago. Right. I think the Lakers 33 is still pretty safe, but it really is nuts. They have a chance to win their 50th game tomorrow night on March 6th.
That's crazy. Yeah. And, you know, they are the North, Charlie. But the thing is that when you look at it, too, and I don't know if you guys saw this, Doug Gottlieb on FS1 came out and said he feels like if Harden doesn't get the calls in the playoffs, he melts, and he doesn't think the Rockets play enough defense, and he's not sold on the Rockets. And that's saying that they were desperate when they got CP3 and Joe Johnson. I'm not going to go that far, but the one thing I wanted to know if you guys noticed, Barry, you mentioned
Wright and Johnson? Desperate when they got Wright and Johnson?
No, he said CP3 and Joe Johnson. because of the fact that they had to
get a Hall of Fame point guard. Right. I'm desperate. I'll take a flyer on that guy.
And we know how the FS1 guys are trying to get attention to and some of the things that they say. But the one thing that I noticed was there were spots where Harden was very, very effective. And late in the game, it seemed to me he tried to be the hero, like he had to be all on his shoulders in the past. But with all the guys that had it going, Gordon and other people, he pulled some long threes and kind of disappeared a little bit. And that bothered me just a touch.
Well, and I think it bothers some of those who are not on the Rocket bandwagon yet that I do it deep in a playoff series against a big time opponent. So it's a cross that he'll have to bear and the Rockets with him. But this desperate ad of Chris Paul, that's just stupid. What do you want to play Pat Hand with Pat Beverly? Yeah, we're good. And now having Chris Paul, who has his own playoff resume with stains and so forth, but if because of the matchup, Golden State, if it's not Rockets Warriors, someone really blew it. Curry and Thompson and Iguodala and Livingston, they do a real good job, or have done in the two playoffs, of walling him off, and they get really locked in on what Harden likes to do and handle rotations, because the Rockets never had anyone else who could make plays with the ball. Now having Chris Paul desperate, I'm mixed on Gottlieb, but that's really stupid.
Here's the other thing.
They were desperate. That's why they got Chris Paul.
And don't sleep on the fact that
the Warriors were desperate. That's why they added Kevin Durant.
The teams that they've added, don't sleep on the fact, or the players that they've added. It reminds me a little bit of what the Astros did. The Astros went out and got some veteran leadership that was lacking in the clubhouse. They added Carlos Beltran. He wasn't going to light up the scoreboard, but he was able to help them. So don't sleep on the fact that if people think James Harden is going to wilt in the playoffs, guys like PJ Tucker, guys like Chris Paul, that's part of what their role is here too, is to not allow that to happen, to play some defense. Joe Johnson. I mean, these are guys that have been there. They've got extra veteran leadership on this team now that they didn't have in the past.
Well, I'll say this. One thing about the bench, because of the fact that PJ's the guy that's going to fill in for Ryan Anderson, because of the fact that the guys you mentioned are going to spend a lot more time on the court together, being CP3, James Harden, and a guy like PJ Tucker, having a Joe Johnson stabilize that bench, because we just said Gerald Green can be a loose cannon, because we just said that there are guys on the bench that are good, but have they been playoff tested and are they seasoned? Joe Johnson is a guy from the locker room and a bench perspective that can give you some maturity and some stabilization when you need it, for sure.
So you're in a 3-point game with Golden State with 5 minutes to go. They have their death lineup on the court. What do you think the Rockets finishing five is? I think it's their current starting five. It's Tucker rather than Anderson for the switchability defensively, and you're just going to hope that Ariza and Tucker are making a decent percentage of their 3-point shots. And that the fact that Capella will have to go out to the 3-point line on Draymond Green, okay, maybe you don't send him out there. And if Draymond Green's going to shoot the three, well, you're not going to beat the Warriors.
What do you got, Barry?
I imagine that they would have their starters out there, but I would be surprised if Capella goes out to guard Draymond Green at the 3-point line. I could see, because they love to do two things the Rockets like to do down low when big men, even with Capella in the game, is you'll see James Harden guard a big man off the switch and Tucker. So it wouldn't surprise me if, in order to keep Capella down low, to, because you know Curry and those guys like to drive as well, especially in that offense, they like to get to the rim similar to the Rockets. So I would be surprised if Capella gets out to the 3-point line. But other than that, I'm with you. I think that you've got to go with the best players that give you the defense and offensive mix that they have.
And back to Gottlieb giving him credit as a basketball guy, the idea that the Rockets don't play enough defense, okay, they haven't done it in a deep in the playoffs situation yet. But Chris Paul's routinely been an all-defense guy. Mm-hmm. Ariza, without question, is at least a solid defensive guy. Capella is very solid. Tucker is a grinder. Right? Harden's the only guy who you'd say is a below-average defender for his position. Well, he's the best in the world at the other end of the court. And they outrate Golden State, or have been equal with Golden State in the defensive numbers. They're I think, eighth in defensive efficiency. So they're just fine at that end. In the end, is it good enough to beat the Warriors? Anything else is a choke job.
I was going
to
throw a technicality
five?
At you.
Who's your five?
Here's my thing.
Ryan Anderson, I'm pulling your chair off.
No. Here's what I was going to say. On a technical aspect, I think they go offense and defense, and they go back and forth. But I think if the death lineup is out there, that means Pachulia is out, which means I can see Capella coming out and Mbamute being inserted in, especially from a defensive perspective, because like Barry, you and I have talked about, the death lineup stopper for me is if you need a stop on any given possession and you have Mbamute and Tucker out there with Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, and then either Capella or Harden, I think you're in a good spot. And if you can go offense and defense, the other thing that you got to worry about is if Capella's on the floor, they're going to foul him.
Yes.
They're going to make him show big kahunas on the free throw line, and that's not a position he likes to be in.
I feel better about that this year than I ever have, though.
He's shooting it better than Dwight did, for sure. But we'll see if he can do that when the game...
All you got to do is make one of two, and they'll stop doing that. And I think he's at that point now.
Craig and I have preached that forever because Daryl's numbers state, as long as you shoot 50% when the hack is going on, you're beating the system.
Yeah.
So we'll see. All right, we got one segment to go with Charlie, and then two more hours of the big show. Don't go anywhere. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Like my sugar with coffee and cream. I gotta
keep it going full steam. Sweet to be something. ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back on The Usual Suspects, opening up a Monday show with Charlie in the first hour till 2. It's Charles Palillo, and he is on our sister station, SportsMap 94.1, 11 to 1 Monday through Friday. And then he joins us Mondays and Fridays, 1:30 to 2.
We got a text. Somebody wanted to know, USA Mike said, do you really think they should take Barkley at number one, Saquon Barkley? That seems to be, after the combine, people are saying, oh, he might be the guy overall when you look at it. Either you have thoughts on that?
I do. Charlie, go you.
He sure looks to be the best prospect since at least Adrian Peterson at running back. They have a halfway decent offensive line if Joe Thomas is going to keep playing. I don't like any of these quarterbacks for the top five. When you're desperate and you have to get one. But if you think Barkley's by far the best player in the draft, I'm taking him before I would take Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or forget Josh Allen, number one.
My thing come back is, with a quarterback it's at number a more four. Talented in terms of sheer numbers draft at the quarterback position than it was a year ago. But I'm with you that there's no clear-cut favorite. If there was one guy head and shoulders above everybody else, and Barry, you were saying this morning that Pro Football Focus had Baker Mayfield going all the way to the top.
That's number one.
So if you can't delineate between Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, then at the same time, you look at the fact that the draft order says the Giants need a running back pretty badly if they are indeed committed still to Eli. If Indianapolis at three is more defensive focused, although they need a running back too, and assuming those two teams might not aren't going to trade out, you know there's going to be plenty of quarterbacks to choose from at four and get you one of the guys that you could still develop, but Barkley might not be there. I might flip my focus to say I'll take him number one simply because I'm worried about him not being there with my second pick of the first round.
Here's something to consider, all right? I pulled up Lance Zierlein's article on NFL.com just to see what he – because he lists, you know, he's doing his draft prep. And he's got the draft order and team needs for every team. So if you look at inside of the top 10, who needs a running back, according to Lance and his – so the Giants are a team that he lists as needing a running back, and they have the second pick in the draft. Then you've got the Jets, the Bucks. And the Raiders, all within the top 10 that need a running back. Would it surprise you, knowing that there's a couple of different options and they have the fourth pick in the draft, and if they move down a bit, Indy's probably not taking a quarterback. The Giants said that they're probably not taking a quarterback. Would it surprise you if Cleveland maybe worked out a trade? And it wouldn't surprise me if it was maybe the Giants that ended up grabbing the number one spot because they're worried about some of the other teams I read jumping up and grabbing Barkley first. Now the Browns pick up another second or third round pick and move down a couple spots.
That's how the Giants got Eli 15 years ago, whenever it was.
Would that surprise you?
The Chargers took him at number one.
It would surprise me simply because there's a lot of surprises. I mean, we talked about it and mentioned it last week. Running backs normally now don't get taken in the top five unless they're special. I don't know how special he is. He tested out great.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
Fournette.
Look, Indianapolis is not on that list. And Lance told me he doesn't think the Giants are going to take him at number two if he's there. But I have a hard time believing that. But here's
the thing. Well, they said they're not drafting a quarterback.
No, I'm talking about a running back.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. They said they're not drafting a quarterback. So that's why I say
they could be lying, Barry.
I know.
And they're loaded on defense. So you know that they're probably looking to help the offense and bolster it some way. The thing that's crazy to me is that Indianapolis should be looking for a running back because they've cut ties with Frank Gore. So they need someone to tote the rock that is going to be dependable and reliable. I don't think they have anybody on their roster. And I don't think there's really anybody out there in free agency that could, you know, shift the scales that much. That's why, I don't know, man. I just think that if they just want to flip the order and take the running back first, you're going to get your choice of a quarterback that's pretty good at, with the second one. And at least you're not going to get killed going in until you see what you have. But that you get, ideally, the one guy best at his position and the other guy one of the top two at the position.
Well, one other variable on the Browns, at the trade deadline, they had that deal to get A.J. McCarron from the Bengals. Mm-hmm. The Browns were just too stupid to execute the paperwork properly. But he's a free agent, having won his hearing. If you sign A.J. McCarron, then you still have your two bullets with first-round draft picks. You know, don't give McCarron $18 million like the Bears were stupid enough to do with Mike Glennon and cut him a year later. But if Hugh Jackson and McCarron get along and McCarron's thinking, here's my opportunity, I'll settle for $10 million per year.
Barry, I got a column
then
right here.
Then you take Barkley and defense.
That says right here, I've got a column that says the Browns are already kicking the tires talking to McCarron. You want to talk about a surefire way to tick off everybody in Cleveland and go, what the hell are you doing? Is if you pass on taking a quarterback completely to take A.J. McCarron. Well, I'm just not sold on him being a franchise quarterback.
They could go 1-4, and then they have like 17 picks every round, right? They could probably trade back into the latter stages of the first round if someone falls or if they like one of the second cut guys. Someone will probably be stupid enough to take Josh Allen in the top 10. I mean, there are no legitimate comparisons to Carson Wentz, best I can tell, other than they're tall with big arms. You know, the Browns could trade back into the first round, the way they got Brady Quinn, the way they got John Manziel.
If I'm the Browns, I might even consider doing both. And you know, they have other needs, obviously. They need help in the secondary as well. But they can get that in the second round and third round or whatnot. But
you think they've already decided DeShone Kaiser is a complete waste to throw away of a second round
pick? I think so. I think it wouldn't surprise me if they maybe draft a quarterback and get somebody like Saquon Barkley or trade that first pick and move back or trade the fourth pick and move back and use and sign A.J. McCarron. If I'm them at this point, maybe does Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell, are those your guys? Or do you think Saquon Barkley and an A.J. McCarron and a drafted quarterback might be your answer to help this offense? And you know, that wouldn't be crazy for me to see them go out and sign an Alex Smith or an A.J. McCarron and draft a quarterback that they like in the first round and then pick up a star in the making as somebody like Barkley.
Alex Smith,
or they
Washington.
Might think a star in the making.
So we know he's gone. But at the same time, right. Minkah Fitzpatrick's another guy that they like a whole lot. And it goes to your point of bolstering their secondary. So there's things to consider. The other thing is they got a lot of money to spend. So they could go out and get an A.J. McCarron, to your point, and still have the draft picks to get the guy that they're going to groom. But on the Kaiser front, the one thing that I think is somehow they thought they had lightning in a bottle and this kid was going to be ready and polished quicker. And he showed from a maturity standpoint and what he did off the field. Not that he is John Manziel, but he's not ready for prime time. He's going to be a longer project.
Tom Savage took care of the ball better.
That's not a good thing.
No, it's not. All right, speaking of Barkley, you see any of SNL? I think it was his fourth time hosting. I to believe it was the fourth funniest appearance.
There were some good things. Normally, Charles is good at adapting. He was really reading in the opening monologue. That bothered me, and they were rehearsing it all week. There were some funny moments, but overall, I was with you. I was kind of like, not what I was expecting. There was a funny skit with the puppet. Bobo, that basically Bobo ends up like taking care of Charles under the table, but it's just overall I wasn't too impressed.
Yeah,
I'm sure you were on the road.
Oh yeah, I didn't see it.
You didn't miss much.
Yeah, I didn't.
But I hear you can go look this kind of stuff up online now.
Yeah, I'm not interested. I'm not a huge Saturday Night Live guy anymore.
Hit or miss, much more miss.
Well, the Chronicle was worried about the fact that he took a shot at the Rockets because they were doing some like champions show.
They just do silly stuff like that all the time now.
The quote was he had played 16 years in the league, and he said, but the last four were in Houston, so really that's just one. Who cares?
Agree. Have you seen Kobe Bryant's
What, are you
Academy
running
Award
the gamut running? Now?
Yeah. It's,
scanning the globe?
Well, I think we covered the Rockets to the city's level of interest.
I didn't even know there was that film existed, and so when I saw tweets that were like, Kobe won an Oscar. I'm like, what are they talking about? Is there a different Kobe? Is there like a Kobe Johnson or something that I'm not aware of?
Lisa's watching it. I'm like writing my column for Sports Map and all over the place. And all of a sudden I stop and I go, was Kobe Bryant in the crowd just now?
He
and
she's like, great seats.
She said, yeah, definitely it was him. And I'm like, what the hell is he doing there? And then like a half hour later, he wins an Oscar.
Animated short.
It's like a cartoon, isn't it?
It's 5 minutes. So I don't
what?
Know. It's animated short film. So I don't know what the longest they're allowed to be. It's his Players Tribune essay when he retired, yeah. Dear Basketball. And he got some animator who was the guy on stage with him, who I guess did all the drawing and turning it into the cartoon, if you will.
You think he wrote Dear Basketball?
Well, he did write the letter to the Players Tribune, and that's what it was based off.
Are we sure he wrote it, or did he have
some help?
I'm going
to give him benefit of the doubt.
Really?
He's a pretty intelligent guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
what college did he go to?
It's a nice little Hard
Lower,
Knocks.
Lower Marion High School.
Oh, okay. School of Hard Knocks.
Okay.
Italy. University of Bologna. Or Bologna or something
Bologna,
like that.
Bologna, yes.
I'm not going to not recommend it. It's 5 minutes. It's
nice. You watched it?
Yeah. And I haven't seen what else is in the category. In 5 minutes, can you really change the world? I'm like, wow, that won an Oscar.
That's crazy. I just don't.
Eric Clapton could.
Huh?
Change the world.
Oh, all right.
All right, that was a reference for you.
7 second delay.
I knew you would catch that.
Got
one.
It.
All right, well, we appreciate it, Charles. We'll catch up with you again on Friday.
Try to do better then.
I appreciate that.
Well, you guys might get partial days off 2 days in a row.
I hope
that's what we're hearing.
Well, we're not working Thursday. We're off officially because A&M plays 12:30 to 3:30. And so the Blitz is going to start at 3:30. Yeah, Blitz will start at 3:30.
Okay, mark your
calendar. If they win, then
so
we're off Friday.
Friday. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then
so.
I won't see you Friday.
It's possible.
It's possible.
Giga Max.
Yeah. There you go.
Go Aggies.
A long run means more fun. That's all we're saying. All right, so maybe we'll see you Friday. Maybe we won't. But, again, catch Charlie on Sports Map 94.1, 11 to 1.
Well, you guys could come in early then and hang out at the
I
end
do
of the building.
Not like the way you think.
No,
that's not going to happen. And Barry's got a long trek. The helicopter's not warmed up like it normally is.
That's right.
So take it easy. All right, right now I'll tell you about my good friends at Infuse Energy, Josh Pesikoff and his staff, locally owned and operated company. And all they are doing is they're focused on getting you the best rate on your energy and becoming your locally owned friend and trusted business partner when it comes to energy for your business or for your family. They do it because they talk to you. They're clear. They're concise. They answer your questions. They ask questions you. If you call, you're not going to get an automated system. You're going to get an operator. And they're going to talk to you and ask you questions because they want to find out what is the best plan for your needs. They are focused on being 100% honest. They're not going to try and screw you over. Sometimes it's going to mean they're going to lose your business to cheaper competition. They're actually going to tell you when they can't compete with rates of other companies and tell you who those companies are because that's the way they want to do business. They want you to know that if there is some place that you can go for trusted energy providing as well as customer service, go to Infuse Energy. You can check them out at infuseenergy.com or call 844-INFUSE2. 844-463-8732. You mentioned ESPN 97.5. Right off the top, you get a $25 bill credit, and they go from there. They are affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. And I'm telling you, infuse energy into your life. You're going to be happier for it. Check them out, infuseenergy.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.